The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Autoria, Source Elements, and RSPE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by Andy Allen and Steve Flower from Audient. We're going to be talking about all things Audient, mixers, interfaces, monitor controllers, just things that they make, why they make them, who uses them, how they work, things. So we should just start straight away with I should address one of you specifically rather than just put it out to both of you. But Andy, tell us a little about yourselves, or yourself, we can do this in turns, and about Audient more generally, for anyone who isn't familiar with the company and the company's products.
Yeah, of course. So, hi everyone, I'm Andy, I'm the marketing director at Audient. I've been there for about 10 years now, so I started around the time that Audient started getting into the audio interface market, which is obviously something that we've become more known for over that time period. So, for those of those people that don't know Audient as a company, as you rightly said, we were founded in 1997 by David Dearden and Gareth Davis, who were quite well known for their time and for founding DDA, the console company. So after selling that, they actually created Audient, and they made the ASP8024, which is a large format inline recording console, which we actually still sell today, which is really quite remarkable and just sort of a testament to just how much of a pioneering design it was at the time. But also just goes to show that simplicity in products can really, really extend their longevity. Audient has a rich history as a console manufacturer, but in more recent times, we've started to take what we learned in developing those consoles and applying that technology to new markets as the audio industry has begun to change and home recording has become more prevalent. So recent years has seen us create audio interfaces, quite a wide range. We have one called the ID line, and we also have one called the Evo range. We've also made mic preamps, and we also make monitor controllers. So really what we're all about is taking the best practice from what we've learned designing consoles and putting that into desktop products. And I think that's definitely something that Steve can talk more clearly about.
And I was going to turn to Steve. And so we have marketing. Steve, what do you do at Audient?
I head up product development at the company. So I started off actually working in the factory building the consoles during a university summer job, just looking around at the job centre, and Audient happened to pop up, which was quite fortuitous, really. Gradually, I got more involved with testing of products doing kind of technical sales role, and just got drawn more and more into research and development. I've always been into coding. Be it from a, websites when I was 10 or 11 to starting to learn C++ and figuring out now how can I get data in and out of this computer and what can we do with that. So it was quite natural to get pulled into doing software testing and then helping to find the bugs in some of the consoles that we were working on at the time then, such as Zen and then ASP2802.
Wow. Okay. So this is, I do, you picked up on a point earlier, Andy, that I was thinking when I was looking at the Audient website, which I must admit I hadn't been on for ages. I mean, I'm aware of the company, I'm aware of the products, but you know what I mean? It's absorbed. I haven't been to the source quite a while. And I was looking at the product lineup, and I was just thinking, yeah, these people just made a console years ago and they went, hey, what else can we make out of this? That's a slightly glib way of putting it, but do you know what I mean about kind of everything that you, every product you make borrows an element that you would have on a console, whether it be mic preamps, whether it be monitor control, whether it be, do you see what I'm driving
yeah,
at?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Everything that we do tends to be inspired by what we learned designing consoles, particularly in relation to workflow and ease of use. That's something we pay very close attention to when making new products. And when we looked around, particularly at the interface market, I'm sure Steve will agree here, we we were very keen to get one, the workflow side of things, the sort of signal flow side of things, and two, the monitoring control side of things, because a lot of audio interfaces on the market at the time were sort of negating that fact entirely, which we felt was a great opportunity for us to do something that was different to the rest of the market.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose where I was kind of going was Audient are an interesting one, just because I think I've certainly in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, I've been in more studios with Audient consoles than any other kind of console. They're extremely common, and the fact that they're taken up as widely as they are strikes me as a practical decision. Because certainly, a friend of mine lives just down the road. He's got a huge, huge 72-channel Audient console in his studio. A few years ago, he had an E-Series in there. He hasn't got the E-Series anymore because, however impressive it may have been, it was just entirely impractical, and he wanted something that wasn't going to ruin him, because once you've got this thing, you need to live with it. How do you think considering Audient didn't exist in what we'd see as the golden age of console manufacturing, you don't have that kind of that 70s and 80s heritage to fall back on and to promote yourselves using. How do you think that's reflected in the company and in its products?
I think we can look back to David's history, especially through the years. He's had incredible amount of experience from his time at AdVision Studios, working on at Tittenhurst Park with John Lennon and such, where they really had to make the most of the technology that they had available at the time. And I think through that's been David's kind of modus operandi ever since. He's always tried to squeeze every little bit of performance out of the technology that's been available at the time, and also not realizing it's not always a good thing to over engineer everything, and that's what allows Audient to be competitive in terms of how we like to make our products accessible to as many people as possible. The kind of design ethos that that David had from the DDA days, he was back at Soundcraft prior to that. It's led to that the simplicity of the design, which makes the product so easy to use reliable, and as you say, with some of the bigger analog consoles that are available, the power draw and things like that, which in these days is not an insignificant cost from running a console. And also just the heat that their things generate, you don't need as much air conditioning, you don't need to worry about capacitors drying out so quickly, all that kind of thing.
Auchoria has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Auchoria.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
So I'm sure most of us think of Audient as a console manufacturer, but you make other products. Analog consoles, it's got to be a tough market these days. Who are Audient consoles for?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think just to jump back to the previous discussion about why you're seeing so many Audient consoles around and why people choose those. Steve, of course, touched on a few points, power consumption, reliability, and ease of use being the key areas. But I think, as you rightly said, we weren't necessarily operating as a company in the golden age of consoles. And that certainly presents challenges for us from a brand point of view. However, I think by the time we started making consoles, technology had moved on so far. Better components were available, better manufacturing processes were available, and that allowed David to design and produce a console that you know, stood the test of time, which is why we're still selling it to this day. People want that simplicity and they want that reliability. They don't want consoles that are going to need to be repaired every couple of weeks or fail in the middle of a session. And I think, you know, although some of the other brands out there can be more attractive from a brand point of view because of their sort of esoteric nature, they're not necessarily the most practical of products all the time. So I think all we're really doing is addressing a market that still want to use the console. Yes, as you rightly said, it's smaller, but we just delivered a product that makes more sense for the modern studio. And I think that's why we're still making the consoles and they're still so popular. And then to answer your next question, I think it's easy to say, and it's a correct observation to say the console market is perceivably smaller than it once was. But you could also argue consoles were so expensive traditionally, actually the market's always been relatively small. And it was just that home recording didn't really exist. So you could argue there was less music, less artists.
But fewer studios. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the biggest markets that the audience consoles sell into is education. And there's a few reasons for this, primarily being the inline nature of the consoles. Teaching signal flow is still a fundamental part of any audio engineer learning, audio. And I think given how simple it is to navigate around an audience console and route signal pretty much anywhere, there's various methods of solving the same problem because of the advanced routing capability. I think the education channel is just very attracted to that. And I think especially when students are in their first few years of learning, going to something, like a large SSL or a large Neve console could be quite overwhelming for them. So I think the audience console is incredibly popular for its simplicity. I also think, we're seeing a much, as the audience brand continues to grow, we are seeing a reemergence in tracking studios and small to medium and occasionally large private studios who, when it comes to actually recording and tracking bands, they want to treat the console as an instrument. They don't want it to be a technological obstacle to their recording session. And I think that's where Audient fits perfectly. And it's also, only fair to say that it delivers quite comfortably on the audio quality side of things. David's design was always to remove noise at every stage of the circuitry design. And the result of that is a very clean sounding mic preamp and a very clean sounding console, which makes it incredibly versatile with the ability to add things, add color and add warmth after the fact. But I think people that want to treat the console as an instrument and they want to experience that joy of recording and that sort of glue that putting a whole session through a console gives you, I think there's very much still a market for that. It's smaller, but there's definitely a resurgence. Mixes haven't gone away for a reason.
Very true. I have to say, I've seen plenty of audience in private studios, but I have seen quite a few in education. And I know from my background in education that if you want to know if the construction of your product is ready for market, put it into education. And if anything's going to drop off it, it will very soon. So, that's a,
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
a great testing ground.
We've got consoles that are in studios that have been there for 20 years, and I'm not trying to impress you here. We genuinely have never heard from those customers again because the products just work. And we might have to do the odd pot or switch replacement because they've worn down for use. But apart from that, it's very rare that we actually get fundamental issues with the console.
Yeah, it's more often that we get the contacts from education saying, well, the budget has become available for a console again because we were expecting it to have broken by now. But we can't really justify it because it still works.
Yeah.
And I think everyone, and Steve and myself have come through the sort of audio side of education as well. I think anyone that's been on one of those courses can safely say there's definitely been periods of downtime in rooms with consoles in. And I like to think that Audient aren't in that bracket.
Absolutely. I think we should talk about interfaces. As I said, looking at your product lineup, you're making more interfaces than you are other products. There are two lines. There's the Evos, which are relatively new, and there's the IDs, which have been around a little longer. For anyone who's not familiar with those two, is there a differentiation between the two? Because there's some overlap between the products. So, which is which? What are they for? How do they differ? I don't know. I suppose I could put that back to you, Andy.
Well, I actually think in terms of the ID range, that's something that Steve should answer, because he was, absolutely fundamental in developing that whole range from the earliest point. So I'm going to pass that one to him.
Okay, Steve.
So really, the ID range came out of, looking at the things that Audient did so well with the consoles. And my own frustrations with interfaces that I had been using at the time too, when I was doing tracking sessions and really, really struggling to have the controls that I wanted at hand there ready for me when I needed them. Simple things like a talk back button and then quick mono checks and things like that. They're just the standard, they're expected on a mixing console. If you don't have one on a large format console, it's a bit of a joke, but that hadn't translated at the time across to audio interfaces, which fundamentally are, for most people now, they are the hub of the studio. Some people will have a monitor controller separately to their interface, but a lot of the time people are just using that volume control on the front of their audio interface. And from using the console so much, I missed all the niceties from the console on any of the audio interfaces I was using. The Audient technology from the mic pres, just and the design ethos in general, very, as Andy said, clean and versatile audio quality, just fits so well with what you need from an audio interface. And so the audio mic pre, as I say, really low noise, great transient response, brilliant for drums and really anything you put it to, really good quality and flexible monitoring functionality. It really lends itself to those audio engineers who can't be necessarily sat in front of a large format console the whole time.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think it was the sort of MO there, wasn't it? Trying to get as much of the console sound and functionality onto people's desktops.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
And that kind of backstory, to some extent, kind of to me, explains the format as well, because it stays with the kind of wedge-shaped, desktop format with a prominent monitor control. I can see how it's kind of, if you're missing that aspect of a large format console, then that's probably why it's kind of echoing that in its form factor. There's no 19-inch rack mount units in that range.
I think the other thing that Steve didn't touch on there is the great work he did on the software mixer as well, being simple to use and not having such a steep learning curve as some of the other companion mixers that were coming with interfaces at that time. They felt complex. They didn't necessarily have great control over things like cue mixes or artist mixes, and we just felt that, again, we felt we could just simplify that, add value, and do things the Audient way.
Yeah, anything that gets out of the way of getting the recording done.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
We should talk about Evo because, okay, so we have this form factor and this idea of bringing a bit of the console with you and just enough of it to get done the work that you need to do, hence the different sizes. And going from compact and small through to actually quite large if you expand via ADAT with the biggest of the IDs. But Evo is different how? Go on.
It's an interesting story, but Evo was sort of born out of Steve and myself's frustration with the current entry level audio interface market. We knew it was an area we would like to provide a solution for our customers for, but we wanted to do something that was different. And we felt looking at that, you know, and I'm talking sub £150 here. Mm-hmm. Looking at that market over the last 10 years, I feel like there's been quite a level of stagnation. And it's solely focused around iterative versions of the same product, you know, incremental improvements on audio quality and the odd feature set. Whereas what we actually wanted to do is we felt we wanted to look at the actual ethnography of audio interfaces and really understand how the modern user is actually interacting with the audio interface. Because, you know, looking at the vast majority of audio interfaces at that price point, they're all on front-mounted, you know, controls, like a sort of 1990U style controls on the front, connections on the back. And I felt that alone was redundant and when you're working on a desktop. And I think the challenges from a manufacturing point of view there were getting everything onto one PCB. That was the easiest way to do it. So what we challenged ourselves to do was essentially take what we can see in the market that we don't like, and that was user experience, it was form factor, and we wanted to see if we could reimagine the way that would work. And that mentality sort of led us to adopt things such as one knob control, smart gain, which of course we'll come to, and sort of digitally controlled mic pre's that allow us to do things like matching stereo pairs, but controlling it from your computer should you want to, making quick adjustments. But really the idea being that the user experience is just effortless. And we also felt, why do audio interfaces at that price point have to look so utilitarian? You know, that was a tertiary point, but we wanted to make sure the industrial design was also beautiful and attractive and people felt proud to have it on their desktop. And so we felt that with all these different things, we could make a compelling enough proposition for what is an oversaturated market, because, you know, it would be very difficult to stand out in that market without doing something drastically different. And really, most importantly, it's in our ethos at Audient to do something where we feel we're adding value. So the other side of that was also we actually felt, well, I personally felt that looking around the market that there was quite a lot of toxicity I felt around the industry at that time. You know, people telling you that you have to have certain gear, or you have to spend a certain amount of money, or, you know, you have to have certain knowledge of technique and a high level of audio engineering to just make music. And in reality, I just felt that was, you know, stopping creatives from feeling like they can make their own music. And we live in a day and age where people like Billie Eilish and Phineas are making records in their rooms, you know, that are smash hits. So these people sitting online telling you you can't do something because you don't have a certain piece of gear, I found was really frustrating. And so what we wanted to do with the brand and the identity that we have, as well as the products, was make everything as simple as possible, cut down on the jargon, make our customers feel that it's okay not to get all the technical practices surrounding audio engineering when starting out. And it's okay to feel that this is your first audio interface, this is entry level, and this has been designed to get you to making music as fast as possible and reducing the learning curve. So it was sort of born out of just a real frustration with the way things were going at the time. And we felt doing a different brand allowed us to do all those things without alienating our audience customers and allowing us to continue doing the more professional focused features that we see on the ID range, for example.
The last thing that you mentioned was Smart Gain, and that's an interesting one. We've been talking about that quite a bit on the blog, and I recognise some of the patterns of we're experiencing a bit of pushback, a bit of resistance from experienced people. And certainly in a piece that went out, today on the day of recording, actually, I did review the Evo 16, which we've been really interested in. And Smart Gain and the idea about that being available across lots of channels rather than just, for example, one or something. And I haven't used it. It's not a compelling feature for me, but then again, I'm used to doing it already. And that's not necessarily who the feature's for. For somebody, for where should I set my gain? Well, press that button and don't worry about it because it's really not that hard and it's not the point of what you're trying to achieve. It's what goes into the mic that's really going to make the difference once the recording's made. I like that. Have you experienced much resistance, much kind of pushback from the old guard, the maybe, you know, should we say ID customer rather than the Evo customer?
It's been a bit of a journey, I think, because when we released it in its first instance with Evo 4, given the nature of it being a small I/O audio interface, I think people might have perceived it more as a novelty. However, from a critical point of view, all the reviews actually were quite surprised how much they found themselves using it after a series of time. Yeah. And I think part of that is also like the sort of psycho semantics of feeling reassured that your levels are set correctly each time you sit down to do something. But really where it becomes really interesting is if you're working independently. I'm sure we've all been in the position where you're trying to record an acoustic guitar and you're the player and the engineer and you're trying to dial in a mic pre at the same time as strumming your guitar, and then you strum and then you go to do the actual take and realize you're playing, you know, 20% louder than you were when you were sound checking, and it just becomes this slow iterative process which isn't particularly challenging, and people can of course easily get around it, but it's just, again, it's just time consuming, and all we're trying to do is get rid of that time consuming process so you can get more quickly to the recording side of things, and then start to worry about the sound and fine tuning it. And then with Evo 16, that's where it really comes into its own. I mean, 8 channels of Smart Gain on a drum kit, for example, we're not necessarily saying, Here are the levels. You have to use these levels. They're 100% scientifically correct. You know, for beginners, it gives them that peace of mind and it allows them to get there quicker. But for seasoned pros, you know, use it as a starting point. It doesn't necessarily have to be the end of, the be all and end of. It's us saying, right, you can press one button. That means you don't have to go around the whole drum kit, hitting each drum at a time, dialing in the gain. If you want to do that after the fact, then you can. You know, it's not forcing you to work in that ecosystem. It's a tool that can be used as much or as little as you want.
You haven't snapped off the gain pot with a hammer before you've handed over control to Smart Gain. No, I get it completely. No. So I said I haven't actually used it firsthand. So in that case, if you hit that green button, it waits for some audio input, and I mean, presumably it'll time out eventually. But so if I need to walk over to my instrument, sit down, pop my headphones on, and then start playing, it'll wait that long for me to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's designed to wait a reasonable amount of time. You know, I would say something around 20 seconds or so for someone to get in a position where they're playing. Then it will start adjusting the levels, bringing it up to what we feel is, you know, a reasonable recording level that kind of makes the most of the dynamic range of the converters in the unit and the noise performance of the mic pre's, and gets people up and running nice and quickly.
So in my case, for example, when I'm doing that kind of self-tracking, I've got control from an iOS device, and I'll just do it from there and sit there and tweak, which is one way of doing it. But actually, it sounds quite attractive just for the sake of being able to sit down, walk over and go chang-a-lang-a-lang on my acoustic, and I know I'm good and I'm ready to go and I'm not up, down. Yeah, I'm softening to the idea already. I'm not against it. It's just kind of like until you experience something. I suppose what I'm saying is that it's a bit like I've only recently got an Echo Dot in the kitchen, and I've never felt particularly strongly one way or the other about voice control of anything in particular. But as soon as it was in there, and I realised that I could switch the radio on and off and change the station whilst I'd got my hands in the washing up, I thought, actually, this is useful.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite simple. Like I said, do you want to spend 45 minutes dialing in the gain for a drum kit, or do you want to spend 20 seconds doing it and then the rest of the time recording?
And of course, the more channels you have, then the gains are incrementally multiplied. And
and I think I mean Steve and I are both drummers, so we come from that background of recording ourselves and going through that iterative process, as I touched on earlier. You know, you hit one drum, you dial the gain, you move on, then you do the whole kit. And then, like I said, once you actually come to do the recording, when you're hearing playback, you hit the drums twice as hard. So you have to make adjustments each and every time.
I've seen that happen, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, this again, it's just trying to help reduce that that time you spent. When we work in a time sensitive industry, you know, people don't want technology to be a barrier. They want to focus on the creative side.
So you can hit smart gain, it sets it, and then you can go and tweak and offset, trim up or down if you think something's a little cold or a little hot or whatever it might be.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally.
I mean,
and the other advantage of that as well is that let's say you've got a load of stereo analog synths, you can stereo pair channels together sequentially. So 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, 7 and 8. So if you've just got a load of analog synths plugged in all the time, and you're worried about your left and right image and trying to match the levels perfectly, you know, on the computer screen using a manual gain pot, it just removes that, and it will always perfectly match your left and right levels. And you know, there's multiple use cases for having a digitally controlled mic break.
Excellent.
But it's the precision you get from that combined with the analog sound.
Nice.
Because
it surprised me how controversial such a simple feature's been. It's fair enough. But actually, you're kind of the way you're doing things and why you're doing them is actually really coherent. And the most interesting answer that I've heard today actually is so in that case, what's the difference between ID and Evo? And it's very clear. And I like that. It's not, hey, we thought we could make a different interface that duplicates something we already have. It kind of doesn't. There's overlap, but they're for a different audience, or at least audiences that are different enough for it to make sense to me, at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
Time's kind of getting ahead of us. We should wrap things up before too long. But before we go, what I'd like to ask you about is, can you share anything about audience plans for the future? I mean, Smart Gain's interesting. It's new. Is there anything in the pipeline continuing in a similar vein, or new products, or anything at all that you can share at this point? And I understand the restrictions.
I always hate this question because I want to tell you everything, but of course I can't.
It's fine. I was listening.
But yeah. Hi, Dad. So we're working hard on tons of new products for both Audient and the Evo range. You know, we want to make it abundantly clear that just because the last few years have seen a focus on Evo, we're not neglecting the Audient range at all, and there's plenty of exciting things to come. Let's just say we've identified some interesting areas that we feel we can innovate in, and let's just say there's a product coming that I think is in high demand from fans of Audient.
Okay. I've got a feeling we're not going to get any more than that, so I won't press you anymore. However, I mean, I suppose the last new product that I became aware of from Audient wasn't an interface anyway. It was a console, the announcement at NAMM. So, you know, it shows that you're very much still in the game. We should probably move on to Find of the Week.
RSPE Audio Solutions. Design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
Okay, find of the week. So, Andy, what's your find of the week?
Okay, so mine's a bit unusual and could be considered slightly dull, but it's a desk from a brand called Secret Labs.
Okay.
And the desk is called the Magnus Desk. So they're a gaming company, but what I found really, really interesting about it is the built-in cable management can be accessed from both underneath and above without having to move the desk at all.
Oh, excellent.
And then the entire desk is magnetic, so you can buy accessories to stick on, like a headphone holder, for example, but also cable management. So you can stick a magnet down over, let's say, I don't know, your headphone cable, which just keeps everything locked in. So it's sort of a mini ecosystem, but I'm a minimalist freak, so it's a dream come true for me.
Oh, excellent. So is this the Magnus metal desk?
Yes, that's
excellent.
That's
correct. I'm looking at a picture of it now. That looks very interesting. When you said a new desk, I thought you were going to say the IKEA
that
we were quite unkind about. So yeah.
No, I'm actually I'm actually getting rid of an IKEA desk. Not the one you're mentioning, not the studio one, but an old one. And I just think the cable management with the amount of gear I've got sitting around is definitely attractive to me. And also, since my other half likes to work on the desk as well, it's definitely good to hide the cables.
Got you. Interesting. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've got a sit-stand desk that I'm very proud of, and I've got the cable tray at the back. And yeah, it would be just a curtain of chaos if it weren't for that cable tray at the back. So yeah, very much a useful thing. Okay, Steve, what's your find of the week?
Yeah, mine's a bit on the left field. You know, this for me, this is about trying to make time for some other things that aren't necessarily what I think to do straight away, but that I've been wanting to do. I've got plenty of books that I've kept buying, interesting ones. You know, Tony Fadell, the guy who designed the iPod, just released a new book. But I'm awful at, you know, staring at my phone a little bit too late into the evening, trying to find the latest news of new chips that have come out that might enable us to do something new, getting all excited, then not being able to sleep. And then I also don't get to read the books I want to read. So there's this Not Boring Habits app. It's just an iPhone app. It, you know, sounds very dull. There are lots of things out there that do that kind of thing. But they have included some really beautiful animations and sound design in there that just make you want to tick that activity off for the day. If I can, if it just results in me getting to read 15 minutes of my book before I put my head down at night, or get 5 minutes of drum practice before I load up my emails in the morning, then that's a good thing.
Fantastic. I that's better than I was expecting. I saw it written down and I just thought, Not Boring Habits app. And I thought, if you have to put Not Boring in the name, it's a bit like if a secondhand car dealer has to put Honest in front of their
name. Absolutely.
No, that sounds interesting. And it's a problem that we've all got. Absolutely. I'm with you 100% of kind of like, get off with the doom scrolling and actually do something interesting and useful. Excellent. Mine's a trick that is a blog post that we put out last week. And it's a trick in Pro Tools where you use an instrument track instead of an auxiliary input for things like effects returns or subgroups. Audio routing, much just the same as you would on auxiliary input, but because it's an instrument track, you can have clips on it, and you can't have a clip on an auxiliary track. And because of that, you can do automation playlists. And if you've got automation follows edit switched on, you can manipulate your automation up and down the timeline in clips, which is something that you can't do an instrument on an auxiliary input, and it's just something kind of new in Pro Tools that I went, oh, that's a really clever idea. It should make something about that.
Yeah, nice.
And it's one of those nice little bits of lateral thinking. So I thought I'd flag that up. Anyone who hasn't seen it, check it out because it's kind of cool. That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you to my guests, Andy and Steve from Audient. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.